This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. And here is Joe Adamoff to answer your questions. Dan Gendron of West Warwick, Rhode Island. Now that there is so much bad-mouthing about the combat troops in Cuba, and some people on Capitol Hill are saying they will withhold their ratification of SALT II, what will the leaders of the USSR do if these threats are carried out?
Well, first of all, one might think that the United States does not need peace, or that the Soviet Union needs peace much more than the United States does. You see, I'm saying this because we constantly hear that the Senate might not ratify SALT II, first for one reason, then for another reason, then for a third reason. You get the impression that somebody thinks they're doing us a favor by ratifying SALT II. One prominent American politician told me, "You have to understand this," he said. "This is part of our electioneering." Well, I want to ask, does electioneering come before the destiny of peace? What is more important, electioneering or peace, may I ask? Now you ask, what will our leaders do if it's not ratified? Well, first of all, I cannot imagine it not being ratified. I believe in the sanity of your great nation. If it is not ratified, why, there'll be a spiral, a new spiral, to the arms race. The danger of a world holocaust breaking out will be greater. We might slip back to the period of the Cold War. Don't forget, this agreement, the SALT II, took 7 years to work out in greatest detail. It takes a lot of time to start working on another or a new treaty. We can't spare all those years all over again, you know. What will happen? Our leaders will naturally see to it that the balance of forces which exist today, the parity of forces, is not upset in favor of the United States or NATO. That's what they'll have to do if it is not signed.
Bill Behe of Altoona, Pennsylvania. Why is most of Russia a God-hating country?
We're not a God-hating country. We are atheists, yes, because our philosophy of dialectical materialism is an atheistic philosophy. We respect the beliefs of believers, whatever their faith. Just like I think believers should respect the beliefs, the philosophy of atheists. If we are atheists, it does not mean that we're some sort of monsters, you know. After all, I personally believe that the ethical and moral values of atheists sometimes, in many cases, are very much higher than the moral and ethical values of some believers. Don't forget, take the question of war. Practically all wars in human history were fought between whom? Between believers. Take the First World War. The Germans were Lutherans and Catholics, and they fought the believers of France, of England, of the United States, of Holy Russia, don't you know? Or the Second World War. It's the same thing. You get believers fighting believers. So you see, being a believer does not necessarily make a person an angel. That's what I'm trying to drive at.
If I lived in Russia and a member of the Communist Party told me to do something and I refused, what would happen?
That's a rather naive question, the way you put it. What do you think, members of the Communist Party are some sort of slave drivers ordering everybody around, telling him what to do and what not to do? Well, take my editor-in-chief. He's a member of the Communist Party. If he tells me to do something, well, I will argue it out with him. He may get the upper hand, or he may think he gets the upper hand, but that is not always so. Well, he has practically the same powers as the head or editor of any newspaper, radio, or television station in the West, too. If just somebody else tells me what to do and he's just simply a member of the Communist Party and I don't agree with him, I'll just tell him where to get off. You see, the party, the Communist Party in our country, yes, it does set the guidelines of our economy, of our development, of our foreign policy of peaceful coexistence. That, yes. But it doesn't order anybody around. its policies are based on the interests of the desires of the absolute majority of the people, and in that lies its strength.
Robert Carberry of San Anselmo, California. What is the average temperature in January in Moscow in degrees Fahrenheit? Do you know the lowest temperature recorded in Moscow?
The average January temperature here is 13 degrees Fahrenheit. Strange as it may seem, the lowest recorded temperature in the environs of Moscow, that includes the city too, was last winter. It was minus 44 degrees Fahrenheit, would you believe it?
Miss Arlene Luskin of Silver Springs, Maryland. Does Joe Adamov on Mailbag answer all the questions he gets or just special ones? How'd you go about it, Joe?
I answer about, well, an average of about 60 questions every month. Of course, we get hundreds of other questions, too, besides those. I pick them myself. Well, I pick those that I personally believe would be of interest to the absolute majority of our listeners. I may be wrong at times, and I may be right at other times. But anyway, that is my criteria.
When a friend of mine was at my house the other day, we talked about Joe, and being like the majority of people, I wonder what he looks like.
Arlene, I wish you wouldn't ask that. I'll be 59 soon. I weigh, well, way over 200 pounds. As one American newspaper put it, I have a basso profundo body. Dark eyes and graying hair. Maybe that'll give you a picture.
Robert Carberry again. What do you think of Jimmy Carter?
Well, from Joe to Jimmy, that makes me kind of feel important. He is the president which you have chosen, after all. It's not for me to comment on him, but since you've asked me the question, I guess I have to answer it. Well, I won't touch upon his home policies. That's your business, you know. Inflation, energy crisis, and all the rest of it, that's for you to decide. We are more concerned with his foreign policy. Well, we certainly think that he is doing the right thing by wanting to sign SALT II. We do not agree with his Middle East policy because we believe that an overall agreement should be decided upon there, not a bilateral agreement, that the Israelis should withdraw from all the lands they occupied in 67 and the Palestinians should have a homeland of their own. Well, we certainly didn't think much of Mr. Carter blowing up the presence of Soviet servicemen on Cuba, because a person in such high office certainly understands that they pose absolutely no threat to any American security, and this was again done, as I've said in a previous answer, I have a feeling for because of electioneering and that sort of thing, and because of the pressure of some of the right-wing elements in the States. That's my opinion, at any rate. Well, I think that gives you an idea of what we think of Jimmy Carter.
What United States presidential candidate would you like to see win the election in 1980?
Well, again, that's for you to choose, not for us. But since you're asking whom we'd like to see, well, we'd like to see a person that would work for peaceful coexistence, for lessening of tensions, a person that would work for disarmament in deeds and not in words, and a person that would be ready to work for a SALT III treaty. A person that would have his administration work for more trade with the Soviet Union. Incidentally, all these things that I've mentioned interest not only us, but certainly do interest. They are in the interests of the United States, too.
Thurston Costner of Brecksville, Ohio. I'm an educational psychologist. How do the Russian schools measure intelligence? And how do they approach the problem of different levels of ability?
You see, our efforts are directed not at exploring the ability of this or that student, but at creating an environment that is conducive to a student's development. A teacher will study his marks, his life at home. We widely make use of a system where better students help those lagging behind. The brighter students get harder assignments, for instance, and a harder homework. We believe that the decisive factor is the environment and the upbringing of a student, though of course we do not deny such things as an inborn ability. Those who want to study more subjects may take some electives. Up to grade 5, we have about 12% of the subjects that are elective, and after grade 5, 20% of the subjects are elective subjects. So you see, we do not divide children into talented children and those that are not so talented. Our groups are heterogeneous. We believe that all children should study together and are certainly capable of finishing a secondary school. Our secondary school is 10 years, not 12. We have no IQ tests. Thurston, you see, we do have some schools for children with an aptitude or an inclination towards mathematics, physics, the arts. They're experimental schools, and we're having a lot of arguments about them. Another thing, for those with greater interests, with greater ability, there's a wide network of various hobby clubs where they can study physics, astronomy, music, and what have you. And we also like to draw upon the help from parents, from public bodies, and so on, in educating our children, too. And we do that on a wide scale, too.
Ron Tull of White Horse, Yukon Territory. When Skylab was falling to Earth, was your country worried that it might crash in your country?
No, we didn't worry about that at all. Another thing I want to say is that we don't go in for this sort of sensationalism. There wasn't a word about such a possibility in our press, I assure you.
In your country, which of the following is the biggest problem? Energy crisis, crime, inflation, language rights?
Actually, Ron, none of these are a problem. Our scientists, our planners, tell us we're not faced with an energy crisis, although, of course, our resources are not infinite, mind you. We're going to develop nuclear energy, and we're also going to use coal for the production of electricity on a very much wider scale. We're increasing our oil output, and in fact, we hold first place in the world in the output of oil today. As for crime, we have no organized crime. Our cities are safe in the daytime and at night. We do have a problem with alcoholism, yes, and the crime that we do have is a result, in most cases, of alcoholism. As for inflation, it has not touched us. Our prices on the basic products are stable. Rent has been the same for about 50 years already. In fact, our real incomes are constantly going up. As for language rights, well, I don't know what exactly you mean, because it's odd to hear you ask a question like that. We pride ourselves on our nationalities policy. Each nation has its schools, its colleges, its newspapers in its own language, its theaters, its television, businesses conducted in the language of this or that republic. I could sum it all up by saying that we telecast in 67 languages within the country.
Brent Gale of Kalamazoo, Michigan. Is it true that you are not allowed to own a rifle to hunt game in the USSR?
If you mean a rifle and not a shotgun, well, you have to have a special permit to use a rifle. But then you have to have a permit from the local police, too, to buy a shotgun or a sporting gun for, you know, target shooting, like a small caliber rifle. You must have a hunter's card and, of course, a membership card of a sports society to buy that. I think it's a good thing. Less crime.
Miss Suzanne Hawkins of Digby, Nova Scotia. Is the Soviet Union experiencing overcrowding in the cities?
Well, we have 16 cities with a population of over a million, you know, and some areas in our country are as densely populated as the countries of Western Europe. Others are very sparsely populated, like almost like in North Canada. You realize that we've had many homes destroyed during the war, and after the war, there was an influx of the rural population into the cities. We had to rebuild whole cities from the ground up. And despite the fact that we are every 2 years moving what amounts to the total population of Canada into new homes, every 2 years, we still do have a housing problem. That, yes. In the condominium where I live, there are families that have two rooms and a kitchen, and the family consists of father, mother, and two children. Of course they're crowded. We still haven't solved the housing problem, despite those fantastic rates at which we're building homes.
And there we end Moscow Mailbag for today.